do you like? Movie podcast hosted by inebriated people. That's Kai with the cracking voice and Heather's touched by evil. One thinks he's Spider-Man, the other is a ninja. It's the Man I Love Film Podcast, it's the MILFcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to MILFcast. This is the Man I Love Films podcast where you don't do movie reviews. Nope. It's a place where people like films get together and deal with that shit. I am your host, Kai. Joining me, as always, the indubitably dubious Heather Baxendale. Say hello, Heather.
Hello, indubitable. Dubying.
That's hard to say.
I like it.
Let's spend a moment with you.
And now it's time for A Moment with Heather.
All right, Heather, so I really just want to talk about Pokemon Go for a minute.
Oh, I'm so happy.
You and I are fucking dorks, right? We could just get that out of the way right up front.
Yeah, we have a problem, but it's a good problem.
It's so strange because they say they have 65 million active users, yet I feel ostracized for being the one that plays it at my age. My family plays it with me. I started doing it because it's like really good quality time to spend with the children.
Yeah. That's kind of what happened with me and Liam last summer. We share mine on my phone, so it is literally both of our games. I don't make any decisions without him.
Brosnan didn't take to it quite as much, right?
No, he decided he was going to indulge being the basement bum and never leave it during the summer and just play Zelda.
Well, at least he's playing something. So I started playing it when it came out, and then I kind of took a break because it got a little old, like Brawlstar. I stopped for about a month and a half, 2 months, and then kind of came back when they started doing the events around Thanksgiving of last year, which I think are really fun. And you kind of got ahead of me during that time, and you're still ahead of me, but I think I just passed you on the Pokédex, did I not?
I think you did. I think you have two more than me now, which is pretty impressive because the one thing that I do a lot, which is difficult, particularly because I'm in Michigan and it's usually pretty frigid for about 6 months here, I hatch a lot of eggs. That's how I get a lot of my new Pokemon. We don't see them around here too often. So you have to walk so you can hatch your eggs. And the only good ones you usually get that are new are 10Ks. So you have to walk 10 kilometers in order for that to be successful.
Yeah, and it's kind of a pain in the ass. Like, honestly, I've started buying incubators. I've never purchased anything for an app before, but I am for this one. And you have to buy incubators and sometimes lucky eggs to like kind of be relevant in the game. But it's kind of fun. I enjoy doing it.
I think so. I mean, I spend money on sillier things. Like, I probably spend about $5 every 2 weeks on some coins. And I do the same thing. I'll get lucky eggs for when I do my evolutions because it get double XP. Mm-hmm. And it's just smart once you get so high anyway. Like, right now, I have to get 750,000 to level up. Yeah, it's rough.
All right, so here's my question for you, though, for this segment. What is the Pokemon that you most identify with?
Identify with?
Yeah, what's the Heather Pokemon?
I name all my Dratinis after the boys. my favorites, I like the Bellsprouts. I think, and we name all the Jinxes, Miley Cyrus and... Rihanna and Lil Kim
and
I'm not sure. I don't know. Which one would you say is me, Kai?
Oh, I was gonna say Jinx because it looks like a man wearing a wig with fake like lip implants and like a dress. It looks like the gremlin that's dressed up like a chick in Gremlins 2.
Yes,
Gremlins 1.
That's not what I look like at all.
Totally is. Spot on image.
The babies are cute,
settled down.
You're an ass.
Let's move on.
This has been A Moment with Heather.
All right, our guest today is an old friend of the show. He has taken over as the shepherd of the lamb from our good friend Dylan. He's the host of the Lambcast, and he has his own site, Life Versus Film, which can be found at lifeversusfilm.com and at Life Versus Film on Twitter. Give it up to our good friend Jay Cluett. Say hello, Jay.
Hello, I am a slowpoke, if you want to know mine.
Do you play the Pokemon's Goes?
I don't. I played Pokemon when I was a kid on the Game Boy. But when the new game came out, I just decided I don't have time for this, which is a shame because I walk a lot. I walk the dog twice a day. I cycle to work. So I would hatch a lot of eggs, I think. But I never got into it. So, yeah, pass me by, I'm afraid.
That's funny. My daughter does something similar. She's like... She kind of naysays it now. She was into it, but she plays. She used to play collect the cards and stuff. She's really into it, but she's always like, Pokemon Sun and Go on Nintendo DS is a far superior game. And I'm just like, eye roll, face palm. You know, like, come on, just get out and walk with me. Let's have some fun.
Yeah, I approve of the game. I got a guy I work with who plays it with his son, and they go on walks every evening. So I approve of the game's existence. I just pass me by. So.
Well, Jay, as you can tell, is from Australia.
G'day.
It's really nice to have you here. I hope we don't have any issues. No, he's not from there. He's from across the pond. I hope we don't have any issues today, because we have had some issues recently. We've taken steps to make sure that doesn't happen. Hopefully it won't, but you know how Skype is. We'll see how this goes. But I do want to say, Jay is you may recognize his voice, because he was here recently for the Tournament of Champions. However, Jay's score for the Tournament of Champions came before our two-year hiatus, so he actually hasn't been on the show in years, and we wanted to talk to him, so we had him back on today. And hopefully we're going to have some fun. He came up with a good topic. I think we're going to have a good time. As Jay knows, for those of you that don't listen, I'll let you know, we typically have a general discussion topic. We're going to do the Series 7. We're going to play the game. But before we do all that, we'd like to talk about what we've been watching.
What have you seen lately? What have you been watching? What have you seen lately?
So, Jay, you're our guest. Is there a film that you have seen recently that you feel compelled to speak of?
Yes, I recently saw Free Fire, which is...
Free Fire?
Free Fire. It's Ben Wheatley's new film. The guy who made Kill List and Sightseers and High Rise a couple years ago, which...
Good director.
I didn't like High Rise. I bailed on it halfway through, but Sightseers and Kill List I think are great. And Free Fire came out here a week ago. You get it in America in a couple of weeks, I think. Because it's a British director, so we get his films first hurrah. But this is his most Hollywood movie, shall we say. It's got Michael Smiley, Brie Larson, Cillian Murphy, Armie Hammer, Sholto Copley, Jack Rayner, Noah Taylor. So it's got a great
cast. Oh, I have
cast.
Seen this. Yeah, okay. I think our buddy Dylan, the former Shepherd of the Lamb, was saying, by the way, for those of you that don't know, Lamb is the largest association of movie blogs. It's where we all met. Just deal with it. Okay. So Dylan, I think, was saying when Armie Hammer is the least interesting person in your cast, you have a really good cast for your film.
Hell yes. And this is, I've been looking forward to this for a long time. It played in some festivals in the last year. But it's basically a bunch of people will go to a warehouse in the 70s for a gun deal that goes a little bit awry. And they will start shooting each other. And that's it for 90 minutes. And it's so much fun. It's because not only is it a fantastic cast, but the script is terrific. It's a very realistic gunfight in that when people get shot, it hurts, and they can't walk for the rest of the film. So after the first kind of scuffle, where everyone's kind of still alive, but everyone has been shot. There's like two characters who can still walk at that point. So everyone else is crawling or skidding around on a little trolley. So it's very realistic, and like I said, the cast is fantastic. It's just a lot of fun, and I recommend everyone go and see it. It's currently my second favorite film of the year after Lego Batman. So.
Oh, wow. So, tell me this. Does it fall into that, like, Clive Owen shoot 'em up with that, like, not quite as hyper-realizes that? Is it just straight-up action the whole time, or is it played out in a realistic manner to where... Because Ben Wheatley doesn't seem like that kind of guy.
He doesn't. Well, I'd say it's more realistic than Shoot 'em Up. Shoot 'em Up was a bit kind of comic book at times,
yeah.
I think. Whereas this one, it's not constant bang, 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 bang. There are moments where it lulls. It's quite comedic in that sense, in that like halfway through, one of the guys does like a roll call to see who's still alive on both sides, and they're all kind of still chatting and joking with each other despite trying to kill each other. So there are lulls in the action, which are welcome. Yeah, I don't want to say too much about it because, you know, not everyone is going to survive this film. So I don't want to say who is great in it because then you'll be looking out for that character. But there were some standouts, not necessarily amongst the bigger name actors. So, yeah.
You mean people are going to die in a Ben Wheatley film?
I know, it's shocking, isn't it?
Yes, totally. I talked about High Rise in the show. I actually liked the idea behind High Rise. I just don't know that it was fully kind of realized to its full potential. And it was shot kind of masterfully. And it was his first time getting, like... I feel like name brand actors for his films, and this is like his next step. I like to see him continue to like get bigger and bigger projects. Kill List is a fucked up movie,
yes, it
but
is.
It's good. It's good. It's a dark film, but I like it. So you do not recommend this movie?
I do. I absolutely do.
Oh, okay. I couldn't tell by the way you talked about it.
Immediately. Yeah. As soon as you can, go and see this film.
Okay. Awesome. Well, I watched Rogue One again, and I'm going to say it. Well, I'm going to say it. Even though I'm not sure about it, it might be the best Star Wars film. Is anybody with me?
No.
I've only seen
it
once, so...
It's...
Go ahead, Heather.
It's not. I mean, it's just not. Empire's better. It's a great movie, and particularly as a standalone film, it's from the other Star Wars films, it's outstanding. I haven't watched it yet again for the second time, but... Okay. it's definitely stuck with me more than Force Awakens did afterwards. As time passed, some of my excitement and build-up for it wore off, whereas this one, I've actually been anticipating it coming out on DVD so I could purchase it and watch it again, because I probably will watch it over and over again without having to watch it with the rest of the saga, which is how I feel like the rest of them are enjoyed best. I think there are definitely different qualities, but that's really bizarre hearing that come from you, but
I can't help it. It's such a damn likable film. And let me say this about Force Awakens. A little bit of the same thing as you. It didn't necessarily penetrate me to, like, last with me. I thought it was, like, kind of a remake of New Hope. It was a totally great film, and I'm dying to see what Rian Johnson does. So don't get me wrong. I like The Force Awakens a lot. BB-8's shit. But I will say I kind of felt the same way as you. However, it's on cable now. And when I turn it on and watch it, I'm finding more and more things that I think are very unique and special about it that make it unique within the universe, and I think it deserves a little more credit than there was the wash of excitement, and then people kind of fell off it a little bit and kind of called it for what it was, and now I'm watching it and I actually think it's a pretty good Star Wars film, but I think Rogue One is better.
I agree.
I think it's very, I can't compare it to the rest of the Star Wars films because it's so different, because it's so standalone. It's not part of the
saga. That's how I feel. That's exactly how I feel.
It's not out on DVD here yet. It comes out on Monday, I think. And I'm looking forward to giving it another viewing, because it's the kind of film that I really like. It's a heist movie. It's a team movie. I love those kind of things. And it's in Star Wars. So I need to watch Rogue One and then immediately watch A New Hope. That's what I need to
see. I have not done that yet. I need to do that, too. We just rewatched it again last night, first time since the theaters. And, it's just really, really fucking good. My question is, are they going to make Rogue 2? I want Rogue 2.
No, I don't think they are.
I don't think that works, Ty. Why? Why not? I'll give you my pitch. Let me give you my pitch.
I'll tell you exactly. It's really funny listening to my dad after these new ones come out, because he actually likes the prequels. Don't hate him for it. And likes them a lot, I mean. So after Rogue One came out, it was like a month later. After we saw it, he's like, that was really good. That was great. And it was the same thing with Force Awakens. A month later, nope, I didn't like it at all. Decided, enough time has sat with me. Don't like it at all. Nah. Don't even think I'm going to watch it again. And then I know as the years go on, he's going to watch them again over and over on cable, and he's going to like them.
Well, here's my thinking. Why not sequels of rogue characters doing the stuff behind the scenes in these battles that lend a hand to the main storyline that's going on with the Skywalkers? Not the same characters from Rogue One, but the same idea. A group of rebels doing something that is intrinsic to the success of the Skywalker storyline.
There's a lot of stories like that out there in the Star Wars verse. So that's not improbable at all. It's just, if they want to keep doing standalone movies like this, it's totally plausible. That is absolutely plausible. And they can do them completely original. They can come up with their own characters, or they can steal from what's already in the verse and, you know, do whatever they want. The problem is going to have to be continuing to be cohesive with all the other movies and whatnot that's coming out. And from the sounds of it, they're just going to keep making them. So it could get tricky as far as originality and making your own story goes with that, I think. I think now's the time to do it if they're going to.
Yeah.
But as time goes on, I think it's going to get trickier.
Okay. Well, you're wrong and I'm right. Heather, what's your movie for this week?
I'm never wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. Except for, like, all those times, but we don't mention them. I did a rewatch, too, and I like bringing up, I know I probably do more than anybody else, but I think, you know, it's part of the movie-going experience is rewatching movies. Time passes, or you watch them in the theater. You have a theater experience. You have an experience at home. You have a different experience when you watch it with different people, and I think that's important to kind of acknowledge.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, my wonderful fiance decided it was necessary to get an even bigger TV for his theater. So he got one of those curved TVs, and it's a 65-inch, and it's absolutely gorgeous. I don't believe it was necessary, but it's insanely beautiful. And my 42-inch went away, and I inherited his 60-inch. Mm-hmm. So I can only bitch so much. However, the first movie that we sat down and watched on it was Dread.
Ooh. Good one.
Yeah. And I know I talk about this movie a lot, but it's because I think it's so fucking great. And there's just so many great elements to it. And that's another movie that I just want more of. Every time I watch it, I'm like, please make more. Please make more. This is like a simple movie. And what our general discussion topic even is, it takes place in one day, in one place. There's
spoiler.
No, There's no real... Yeah, it's going to ruin it for everyone. There's no real background on the characters or anything. It's just straightforward, good action, and it's absolutely gorgeous. There's really, really fun and just, like, twisted R-rated violence in it, which, you know, those are fewer and far between now because studios make more money off their PG-13 rated movies. I get it, but it sucks for me.
Seems to be changing, though.
And there's more. There's more hard R's coming around. I mean, like, you know, we get Wolverine even and we get Deadpool. So even in the superhero realm, they're starting to come around to R, which I hope continues because I like seeing adult films. I like hearing F-bombs on occasion. I'm a fucking grown-up.
I like adult films, too.
Yeah, give them to me. I like them. I liked them when I was a kid, and I probably shouldn't have. So, but I the experience of watching this again for probably the 10th time I've seen it, and even in a different way, I just appreciate everything it achieved even more. And I really want to see more movies like that, if not Dread, the sequel, or whatever.
Okay, you need to go see The Raid. You still haven't seen The Raid, have you?
Yeah, I've seen the first one. I haven't seen the sequel yet. And that was badass. Oh, the martial arts in that were sick.
And people give those two films a lot of shit because I think Dread came out later in the year or the following year. But like, if you go to the production on them, they were simultaneous. If not, Dread being a little bit sooner, so like there was no carryover there. It just happened to be like a similar concept, both done very awesomely.
Yeah, I don't care if one copied off of the other. They're both unique in their own way with a similar concept, and they're both fucking awesome. So
if you couldn't copy other people's ideas and make them awesome, Quentin Tarantino would not have a career.
Oh, there'd be no movies. There'd be no new movies.
Yeah, there'd be no new movies. And like Jay said, like when he was describing his film, if you couldn't put ... goes awry. Like, that's just like how you describe every film, you know? We need to go take down a kingpin. She's in a building that's, you know, 20 stories high, and things go awry. That's just how they make movies nowadays. It's the same concepts over and over, and shit just goes wrong. But Dread is a good one. All right, so I think we have three really good films. This might be the best trifecta of films we've ever had. So definitely go see it. See Free Fire, Rogue One, Dread, and fuck it, see The Raid 2. In fact, see The Raid 1 and 2. There you go. All right, so this brings us to the end of what we've been watching. It's time to get into
today's general discussion topic.
So as is common knowledge at this point, we always kick our general discussion topic over to our guest. And they send mixed ideas back. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. Jay tried to do the pussy route and not have an idea. And I was like, okay, dude, whatever. I'll think of something. But he redeemed himself. He came back the next day and he had an excellent idea. So, Jay, why don't you tell us what your idea was?
In fairness, I spoke to Heather on my podcast last week, and she said, you always have loads of backups, so I can use one of yours. Anyway, mine was...
Actually, what I said is, Kai talks shit about everybody's and picks his own half the time.
No. Hold up.
Heather... that wasn't really good, so we're going to go with mine anyway. And you say it in the show.
We have not done that. That has not happened in months. Okay, first of all. Secondly, I have... Heather sends me a plethora of shitty ideas, and what I do is weed through them to find, like, fool's gold, okay? So, yeah, I have a huge list of ideas, but you don't want to talk about them. I like yours better. Let's talk about what yours was.
Well, inspired by Free Fire, which is set entirely within one warehouse, I wanted to talk about films set in one location, potentially all in one day as well. That's
okay.
Either or. So, shall I start with number three?
You know what? I found that the number three going down to number one thing tends to take fucking half an hour, and I don't think anyone has the patience. So what I would suggest is, why don't we just all go through and do our lists, and we can talk about each film as they come.
Okay.
Is that fine?
Yeah, fine.
Yeah, so why don't you kick us off?
Plus, we usually overlap anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, my number three is a film called Exam from 2009, directed by a guy called Stuart Hazeldine, who I didn't think had done anything else, but it turns out he's just directed The Shack with...
Oh, really?
Sam Worthington, which I'm never going to watch.
By the way, speaking of a film that should take place in one location, The Shack, right?
Yeah, you think.
Yeah.
But Exam is entirely all in one room, apart from you see the characters wake up in the morning, but that's about it. And the title is, it's an exam. There's these eight strangers, you don't know their names, they all go by character descriptions, which they give each other, so there's white, brown, black, and brunette, and various hair colours. They're all taking an exam for a position in a company. It's set in a kind of dystopian future where some virus has broken out, and this is the health company, which has some kind of miracle drug. And they're all told, you can't talk to the invigilator, who is played by Colin Salmon, the great Colin Salmon. You can't spoil your papers, and you can't leave the room. If you do any of those three things, you're disqualified and you're out. And it's just, what happens next, over the next hour and a half? and like one girl writes on her newspaper, on her paper, and gets taken out immediately because she spoiled her paper, so she's gone. And then what do you do after that? And it's fun. There's a guy called Luke Mabley who plays the character of White, who is probably the standout performance. None of these actors have really gone on to do anything else, which is a shame. Apart from Jimmy Mystery, who was in The Love Guru and 2012. But Luke Mabley was in White, is White, and he's the most angry, the most kind of out there performance. So he's the standout. But everyone in it is good. And it's a film that it's best to watch in one sitting. It kind of happens in real time. Yeah, and it's very tense.
This is one of those films that you see on Netflix and you think it's one of their plethora of kind of B-horror-ish movies. And it kind of rises above that status. I don't know if I'd put it on par with some of the better horror films out there, but it's a really good movie.
Yes. I didn't realize you'd seen it. Sorry. Yeah, it's great. Have you seen it, Heather?
No, I have not.
Okay.
Well, Heather fears exams because they make her use her brain.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that's what I do. I avoid thinking all the time. Blank slate.
That's why
here.
She's never wrong.
Well, my number two, I could have done the list entirely of Hitchcock movies. Hitchcock is one of my favorite directors.
Yeah, Rope's one that's been coming up a lot lately, and that's one of those ones that, like, kind of real-time film, one location, very good, very inventive for when it came out, and I was tempted to put it on my list, but I did not.
Well, I did. Because I went to do One Room and One Day. So I could, have had, Rear Window, I could have had Lifeboat, both of which are fantastic. Rear Window is probably... It's possibly Hitchcock's best film. It kind of ties with North by Northwest for me.
It's my favorite.
It's terrific, but it takes place over a summer, whereas Rope is within 80 minutes, because as Kai said, it's in real time. These two guys... Well, if you talk about it all the time, I don't really need to go into it, but yeah, two guys kill a guy, hide him in a box, and then have a party around that box.
And it's I'm sorry, Jan, I don't mean to cut you off, but the interesting about it is that, like, the way Hitchcock shot it is it looks like a continual shot movie, okay? And if you watch it closely, I want to say there's probably 8 to 12 cuts in it, yes. But they're so, I mean, and a couple are kind of blatant, but you got to realize when this film was being made.
Yeah, they were out of necessity, because that's how much film they could fit in the camera.
Exactly, and how, for the time, who was trying that? A, nobody. B, who was doing it so seamlessly? I mean, there's one shot where he kind of moves into the back of a guy and the jacket fills the frame and it darks out and then he backs out and you see it's a clear cut. But if you're not looking for it, and at that point you're only looking for it because your head starts to go, hey, man, they haven't cut yet. So when they finally do it, and it's a little blatant, but like at the time, I got to think that's pretty innovative filmmaking, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I like looking out for those kind of things, but often I just get engrossed in the film and... It's only when, like when you said, well, they zoom into the guy's back, or when they open the box and they zoom into the back of the lid of the box and come back out again, you can kind of tell. But the other ones, I don't care. I'm too engrossed in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the two guys who does the killing, Farley Granger, he's appeared in a few other Hitchcock films. I really like him as an actor, but his voice, it's the Abe Froman voice from Ferris Bueller.
Mm-hmm.
When he does the Sausage King, he has the exact same voice, and I cannot take him seriously. If I could do an impression of that, I would.
Oh, God, that's funny.
Yeah, but I wanted it to be Rear Window, but that's not in One Day. It's a Rope. And my number one was not difficult at all. It's 12 Angry Men. It's one of my favorite films of all time.
Yeah.
It's you know, the title, 12 Angry Men. 12 guys, they're on a jury. They're deciding the outcome of a murder case. And it's the deliberation process. They're all in a room and the adjoining bathroom. And, yeah, they hash it out. The cast is led by Henry Fonda. Who is the one guy who is showing possible doubt of the guy's guilt, and everyone else is against him, and he slowly wins people over one by one by one. And it's such a terrific film full of character actors: Jack Klugman, Lee J. Cobb, Jack Warden, Ed Begley Jr. That's a different guy. That's his son. and the guy who voices Piglet is in there, John Fieldler. And once you realise that, you can't take anything he says seriously because he sounds exactly like Piglet whenever he talks.
You're ruining movies for yourself right and left, dude.
It's what I do. I watch a film with somebody else's in it and, yeah, it just gets destroyed for me. But the way this was filmed, like Rope, this was filmed innovatively as well, with making the set smaller by bringing the walls in as they filmed it to make it seem more claustrophobic.
Really?
Yeah, it's Sidney Lumet directed it and he just played with his actors. So at the first scenes, when they're all in the room, they can all move around really freely. But by the end of it, they're having to kind of edge around each other, pull in chairs here and there, just to move around the room. It's really well done, but you don't notice. You have to look into, you have to research the film to find this out.
This would fall under that list of that thing we talked about last night. It was kind of like, you know, what those films you wish you've seen that you haven't. I've never seen 12 Angry Men. And I think I love Sidney Lumet. I've seen everything he did. He's done, including his other courtroom drama with Vin Diesel. But I have not seen 12 Angry Men.
Wait, what? Courtroom drama with Vin Diesel? What are you talking
Find
about?
Find Me Guilty? You've never seen Find Me Guilty?
I've never seen it. No. I've never heard of it.
Me either.
Holy shit. Directed
Vin Diesel's in it?
Vin Diesel's in it as a member of the mob.
Oh. Okay.
The Italian mob.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm looking at it now. His hair is ridiculous. The fact that he has
wearing,
hair,
yes,
it's ridiculous.
Wearing a wig. Wearing a wig. You have Peter Dinklage plays one of the defenders in the film. It's you got to see it. It's I don't know how they cast Vin Diesel. I don't know why I find him so likable in it. I don't know why I think he did a great job. It shouldn't work on any level. It's a really good film.
Ron Silver's in this film. I love Ron Silver.
Wow, the hair is weird.
His hair is weird. Yes. Vin Diesel and hair just don't mix.
They don't.
I love it. One of the things I like about him is he's bald, and you can still tell that he has a receding hairline. It's very sexy.
But watching,
I'm very specific about the things I like.
The thought of watching Vin Diesel in that wig doing like an Italian mobster kind of like character while Sidney Lumet is behind the camera and Peter Dinklage is off to the side, the whole thing is just seems absurd. And it, for whatever reason, it's kind of a good movie. So
I'll watch that. I'm writing it down right now.
Well, 12 Angry Men was his first feature film. And I
was, is it his first?
And
really?
I still say it's his best of the ones that I've seen.
That sucks. It's all downhill from there out.
He's made some good films other than that. Like, Dog Day Afternoon is a pretty good movie.
Which would fall good for this category as well.
Yes, yeah. Well, they move away from the bank at some point. So.
Yeah, see, I don't know about you guys. I was kind of thinking about this. I didn't want to go into, like, we kind of threw this out as you could either do films that took place in one location or films that took place in a day. Try and mix them together. But, like, there's so many films like, what was it? Dog Day, for instance. I had a list here. Reservoir Dogs, Castaway, Disappearance of Alice Creed, The Mist. They primarily take place in the one location, but when you get down to it, they start somewhere else or they end somewhere else. So, like, I didn't want to cheat like that. I wanted to go for the stuff that was definitely in one room.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I thought it was more implied that you could use one or the other or both together if you chose to. So I used one of those movies reference because it does take place in one day, essentially, other than the first scene.
All right, why don't you go ahead and give us your three then, Heather?
Okay, my third is Reservoir Dogs.
Okay.
It takes place in the series of a day. Well, it's still, I mean, I think it really just comes down to your personal preference, but I mean, it's still, speaking of, you know, first movies being just outstanding, maybe Tarantino's best movie in some ways, but the whole movie takes place in a warehouse. And it's, I think I went like 8 or 9 years without watching it. And when I rewatched it, I was just astounded by how intense and brilliant it actually is. And the fact that it works, it shouldn't work. But it's a fantastic movie.
I've had an argument that I think it might be better than Pulp, although Pulp kind of caught the pop culture center.
I agree.
I think I enjoy Pulp Fiction more, but I think Reservoir Dogs might be a better movie. And there is a distinction.
Yeah, I can see that. I will say one location is stretching a little bit, considering you have Chris Penn's dad's office, running on the street, the diner in the beginning, all the flashback stuff.
Yeah. But it still takes place, the timeline still takes place in one day.
Okay.
Except for the flashbacks, but okay.
But that's...
Except for all the flashbacks, yeah.
Well, I have other choices if you'd like me to discard that one.
I considered it, but I figured it was too gray areas. Too much gray area.
It's written in front of me, Heather, but yeah, I put it on the gray area list. I had it
as my number three because I wasn't completely sold on it. It's another reason I didn't pick Alien, because the majority of the film takes place on the ship.
Yeah.
But I thought, too much of the beginning does have them down on the planet, so maybe I shouldn't include that one.
Let me ask you this. Okay, so the ship, would that count? Or like, Heather, I was even thinking of a film we love, Tremors. All takes place in perfection. Does that count as one location?
I thought that's how I considered Pitch Black, because it was the same thing, where it was implied, really, that it was only one day that they were there, and it was just the same area. I'm not sure. I guess it gets down to,
it depends,
you know,
on what
semantics
you define
what you
as,
think.
As a location, because you could say, oh, the Lego movie, it technically takes place all in this basement.
Yeah.
But, I'm not going to count that.
Yeah, again, it depends on, you know, how literal you want to take it as well. So I think Reservoir Dogs is in the gray area, but I think you can apply it to either or if you really wanted to argue it. If not, I would probably throw in Rear Window there instead, which was going to be my other choice. Okay. My second choice fits in perfectly, and it's Breakfast Club.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Fantastic.
I still think it's, I mean, it's a great movie, and it's held up. It still captures all of the nostalgia of the 80s. And at the same time, I still feel like I go back to that time when I was that age and can relate to all of those freaking assholes.
Yeah.
I think have you guys seen the movie Summer School?
Of course.
Okay.
I heard no.
I've never even heard of this film.
With Mark Harmon and Francis Pizza Grip.
Wait, Mark Harmon did things before he was in the West Wing?
Oh, yes. Mark Harmon and Kirstie Alley in 1986, you must see.
And Steve Carell is the asshole principal in it.
No, he's not. He just looks like him.
It's him.
Like...
I swear it's him.
I'm looking at
photos. It's not him.
I'm looking at photos. This is not ringing any kind of bells.
Oh, my God. You must see. It's because you live on an island, man.
Everyone lives on an island.
That's a good point.
In any case, it's. I think Breakfast Club does the same thing for me. That does the same thing for me, to where it captures that sense of youth and fun at the same time. Mm-hmm. But it's brilliant, and it's simple. It falls into stereotypical teenage, you know, archetypes, but it works. And that's, I think, why it's lasted so long. But that's my number two, and I don't think that... I figured Kai might have that one on his, actually. But my number one is Clerks.
It is
the ultimate in one day film. I'm not even supposed to be here today.
Yeah.
And this for me too, and I love that for a long time, Kevin Smith said, you know, it's not even a movie. I still think it's my favorite Kevin Smith movie, and I think the older I get, the more I appreciate it. And having worked in the customer service industry for so long, I still go back and just go, a bunch of savages in this town. It's there's nothing. And I worked in a video store all through college. There's nothing about that movie that I don't connect to on every single level. And it's nostalgic. It's still funny. It's still applicable today. And it's brilliant writing. It's just fantastic writing. It's a great movie.
Wait. You went to college?
Yeah, I did. I know.
Holy shit.
This is exactly why no one needs to go to school. It's perfectly fine.
Her mom probably homeschooled her and told her it was a collegiate course that they do after high school or something like that. That's what I'm thinking. That's what my money's on.
If I was homeschooled, you guys would be so scared. I wouldn't be on the show now. I'd be locked up somewhere.
I like the choice of Clerks because I think the thing, when you're getting into like doing everything in one day or doing everything in one location, I mean, it's like... the heart of what being an independent filmmaker is, and Kevin Smith being of that time with the Robert Rodriguez's, the Tarantino's and stuff like that, it was, you know, you're doing that based on necessity. I mean, you have to come up with an idea that you could shoot at one spot, and you probably only have certain times that you can shoot it, or like a limited time, and just to do it at a location makes sense for the sense of budget and what they're trying to do. You know what I mean?
But at the same time, I think part of that, it really does invoke a lot of creativity. You have to have characters that are interesting. You have to have good dialogue. You have to have good dialogue in a scenario like that. And you have to have interesting people. If you're limited to one location, no matter what's going on, those things have to exist.
That's why I picked this topic, because I think, well, they say... was it creativity thrives on limitations?
It forces creativity.
Yeah. So, like, the fact that the shutters are closed all day is because they film most of it at night, because that's when they could film it.
Exactly. So, exactly.
I love that kind of stuff.
Which adds the great scene, like, where they have to go out and lock the front, and I assure you we're open and all that, which is, like, one of the highlights of the film, and that was probably forced. It was probably forced on their hand, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. Okay, I like that. Well... here's the thing for me, guys. If Breakfast Club was on the short list, Dog Day was on a short list. Really like those films. If I'm going one night, one location, my number one is always going to be Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
Well played.
Yeah.
Nice. Which to me is one of the first kind of independent films. Like, before we had independent films, Night of the Living Dead was a traveling show Night of the Living Dead, you know, taken in the trunk to various theaters to show around. I mean, it was essentially what independent filmmaking was before independent filmmaking existed. So that is not only a classic film for me, but it's like one of my favorites of all time. So it falls into both categories. I love it. So aside from that, instead of doing a list of three, because we always say you can interpret these things however you want, so I'm doing whatever the fuck I want, besides it's my show.
It's your show. Yeah.
So instead of picking my favorite three, I just wanted to rifle off a list of, what do I got here? I have 8 or 9 films that all take place in one location or one day or both. And I don't think, you know, us as film fans have probably seen most of these, but for those that are like the general listener, don't see a lot of films, I want to throw these out as suggestions as really good films, kind of smaller films. So I'm just going to rifle them off. I want to say, well, Heather, for you, I wanted to say Moon.
Nice. Yes.
You still need to get to that, but I want to say...
I actually have it on my list right here next to Find Me Guilty now.
Oh, there you go. Okay. That's a nice double feature. so here's the films I want to rifle off. I'm going to say Cube, Silent House, Across the Hall, Splinter, Dogville, Coherence, The Invitation, Lock, and Snowpiercer.
Dogville.
Snowpiercer.
Dogville.
Why Dogville?
Okay. Did you not like Dogville?
It's fine. I wouldn't have put it on any kind of top three list for anything other than films without a set.
Well, it takes place in one... It's shot like a play. The film is shot like a play. Yes. And so it takes place in one location.
I'm not arguing with the choice for the list. It's just... Oh. I'm arguing with... What is it you liked about it so much?
Okay. Admittedly, not a Lars Van Trier fan. Like Dogville a lot. It is a chore to watch the fucking movie, but it's excellent acting, and the story is... look, there's going to be a point where you want to bail out of the movie, and I think if you stick with it to the end, it makes it worth it. Because the ending takes such a turn that is so cool that it pays off for everything you sat through. I really liked it. I thought it moving. I thought it was good, man. I don't know what to tell you.
I've only seen it once, and I went into it knowing nothing about it. So I had
same here.
So I had very little. I was kind of confused as to what was going on for a while, in terms of why are these people walking around houses drawn on the floor. What is going on? Why did they film the practice run of this?
Well, and I think they made a sequel. They were supposed to do like a trilogy. I think they made a sequel with someone else playing the Nicole Kidman part.
Okay.
I'll Google it as we go into our next segment, but yeah, it didn't pan out, but I really like Dogville. I don't know what to tell you. And yeah, I started playing it, and I thought I had accidentally hit the bonus features or something, and I was watching like the what do you call it when they... Oh my god, you ever blank on a word, you know?
Yep.
Rehearsals, like the rehearsal process or something like that, but it wasn't. But anyway, of these, I think two I've seen in the last couple years that I really like, Coherence and The Invitation, One Night, One Location... as well as Silent House, which is a film where I've heard people that don't like Silent House. Silent House is shot similarly to Rope and even a little more smoother, as if it's one continuous shot, and they do a really good job of it. It's manufactured the way they do it, but it's very good. It's Elizabeth Olsen when I first realized that she was not just kind of like cashing in on the family name. And I like it. I think it's a dark little fucked up movie, and it's shot really well, and it's very interesting, and I think everyone should see it. So.
The Dogville sequel is Mandalay.
And who was it? Bryce Dallas Howard?
Bryce Dallas Howard, yeah.
Yeah.
And Willem Dafoe replaced James Caan.
Okay. Well, it's Lars Van Trier, so Willem Dafoe had to be in there somewhere.
And
right?
His penis.
And both halves. Okay. So that brings us to the end of our general discussion topic. What'd she say?
Say anything. What are you talking about?
penis. I forgot. Heather has penis threats. Heather, why don't you end this segment? Set up the Series 7 for us, will you?
So we're done with this part where Kai says things, and we're going to the next part where we have our Series 7, which is things answer questions.
Wow. I think that says it all. Play the music.
Hey, you better listen up. It's time for the Series 7, so shut the fuck up.
Oh, I love that bumper. Heather, I love Steve Bush. Did we mention at the beginning of the show, Heather, as you know, has a Midwestern accent at times, and I put it out into the ether that our good buddy Steve Bush, who does all of our music, should take advantage of that and put a little bumper together for us. And he sent me a text the other day saying, message received. He's on vacation currently, but when he gets back, he will be hard at work on what he calls Heather's Midwestern colloquialisms bumper for us.
And Steve, feel free to do something with the way that Kai just said colloquialisms. Do something yeah, with that sure. now.
I don't.
It's funny that you're mocking the way I speak, and yet you can't mock it properly.
All right, say colloquialisms.
Colloquialisms.
One more time?
Colloquialisms.
Yeah, you're missing like vowels and consonants in that.
It's my Midwest accent. Piss off.
If only we had that bumper right now. All right, so that's the side thought. Let's get back to the show. So it's time for the Series 7. This is 7 film-related questions meant to generate discussions, opinions on film and pop culture. You can interpret these questions however you want. Be silly with them. Take them seriously. I don't give a shit. We go around the room on all these. We start with our guest, Jay. Jay, question number one. This might be a recurring question. I've come up with what happened to that dude. And this is essentially an actor and actress who was on the brink of stardom or who was officially a star that has kind of burned off and we can't own as much anymore. Jay, who do you got for us?
Well, the ones who never quite made it were on the brink. I've got two who are very similar. I've got William Atherton and Christopher McDonald. They're both kind of still acting today. They're both character actors. They both played a lot of villains in the 80s and 90s. But they never really made it into people knowing their names. So like, William Atherton is Richard Thornburg in Die Hard and Walter Peck in Ghostbusters. And Christopher McDonald is Tappy yeah. Timmons in Requiem for a Dream and the boyfriend Daryl in Thelma and Louise and the host of Quiz Show and Shooter McGavin in Happy Gilmore.
You named everyone that wouldn't bring it directly to the casual viewer's mind and then threw it in at the end.
Well, I named the three that I've seen more than Happy Gilmore.
Okay, fair enough. But you've seen Quiz Show more than Happy Gilmore?
I've seen Quiz Show more than once. I've seen Happy Gilmore once. So yes, I'm sorry. I like it. I like it a lot. I eat Show Like You for breakfast. But it's... I really like Christopher McDonald. I really like William Atherton. They never really made it. And I don't know why. They're still going. They're still playing little bit roles in TV shows and smaller films. But they never...
Is like a 40-year career, is that like not...
Well,
you know, I mean,
they're not making it as a star.
Yeah, they're not.
And that's the way
names.
I looked at it, too. I thought it was, you know, they were on the brink of becoming a star, thought to be a star, or had a career where they... I mean, both of my choices are, they're still... One is that they were on the brink of the career and didn't make it at all, and the other one is still working, but never really made it as a big star.
Well, let me give you mine real quick, just so you can understand like where I came
I know
from
which work. One you picked, I'm guessing.
Who?
Skeet Ulrich.
No.
I
thought of Skeet Ulrich, because he really did do this, and we don't even think about it.
You want to hug him, you like to bring him up.
I think girls want to hug him.
I don't.
Because he's like poor man's Johnny Depp when he was hot.
Exactly. I'd rather have actual Johnny Depp.
Okay.
If you're going to fantasize, you might as well fantasize about the really big one you can't have.
No, I listened to a bunch of... I listen to sports radio a lot, not so much when baseball season comes around, but most of the year otherwise. And I was listening to the Rich Eisen show, and they said, after the break, Michelle Monaghan's coming on the show. And I was like, Michelle Monaghan? Remember when she was like, I think I first saw her in, was it Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then she's Tom Cruise's wife in Mission Impossible 3, and then she, John. Like... Yeah, she's in the, what's the fucking, the one with Shia, when Shia was, Eagle Eye was, like, supposed to be a big movie, you know? And she's always
when in all those movies, too, it was kind of like, ooh, she's in this. Like, that's a reason to go to the theater, too.
Exactly.
She was high billed.
And I haven't seen her anywhere, and I guess she's doing that Amazon show with the guy from Breaking, Aaron Paul, The Path, but I don't have Amazon, so I don't watch any of that shit.
But
not that it's shit.
She seems to just have, like, the supporting woman role in, like, in Patriot's Day, she was Mark Wahlberg's wife. In Pixels, she was the love interest.
Yes.
I'm assuming. I haven't seen these films.
Pixels. I forgot about Pixels. But yeah, I just feel like she was on the verge of the next big female star and then just kind of faded away. And that's where I went with it. But where did you go with it, Heather?
In that way, I was thinking Sam Worthington was a good example of it. I know he's one of your generic...
White guys.
Yeah. And he kind of is, but I always liked him a lot. He doesn't have the most range. He's not the best actor, but he's really likable, charismatic, and he's perfect for those kinds of roles. I'd rather have him than like Jai Courtney or many of these other fillers. I think that he's good to fill in that stereotype.
You are biased, though, because Cameron made him famous with Avatar, which... He did branch out and tried, like, you're right. He kind of went and took some interesting roles.
He was in that movie with Jennifer Aniston, Cake, and he was full ginger in that, too, which, woo-wee!
Well, he did a David Ayer movie. He just did the movie The Shack, which we were talking about.
How could he not have made it? He's in The Shack. Come on.
Hey, man, those faith-based movies, if one thing that Fantasy Movie League has taught me, those faith-based movies can never be counted out.
Oh, I nearly played that new one The Case for Christ seven times this week. I was so close to playing that seven times.
Yes, our good friend Wayne did it, so good luck with that, man. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting week. Right now, Justin's in number one, but nobody cares about this, so let's move on. Heather, go. Who is your other one?
My other one, he's one that is the other example that's working and has been working for the last 20 years, but not as a lead man, okay. And that's Josh Hartnett. I love him. I fucking love him. And he does a lot of different movies, too. He'll do the, you know, he's done rom-com stuff. He's done tons of different action
days
movies.
Days and Night.
Yeah, he's been all over.
Yeah,
he's been across the board and done a lot of stuff. The Faculty is probably my favorite. I love that movie so much.
Isn't he doing TV now? Isn't he on Penny Dreadful or something?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, and he's actually really good in it. But it's over. I think it only did 3 seasons. It's very, very, like, emotionally exhausting to watch. It's intense.
And let's not forget Lucky Number 11, I fucking like.
It's fun. It's a good movie. I think he's done well. He's proven that he can act, and yet he's not a typical household name, and you don't ever see him in those big budget films as your lead guy. And the ones that I think they've tried, he hasn't really been successful with.
I like that better than Skeet.
Yeah.
I feel like in about 15 years, the answer for this is going to be Will Smith.
The
films that he's picking recently. He's making terrible choice after terrible choice after terrible choice.
I agree. The last 10 years, you're absolutely right.
He's like edging towards Nick Cage, John Cusack, straight to DVD territory.
You know, I Bruce Willis, I was tempted to throw in here because I don't know if you know this, but he's done a run of those straight to DVD shits. But like, here's the thing about Will Smith is he can make 10 years worth of bad decisions from now till 2027, and then in 2028 he'll take that Academy Award role.
Yep.
And they'll be like, he's back. It's Will Smith all over again, the guy we always loved.
He can do it because you still like him. He's Will Smith. He's likable no matter what.
He's so likable, you almost want to dislike him for how much you like him.
It's true. It's very, very
his own personal backlash, yeah. All right, well, let's move on to question number two. We're done, right, Heather?
I think so.
Okay, cool. Question number two. Jay, this was your torture question. what is... Name a film you love and discuss its flaws. Jay, you get Jurassic Park, go.
I don't know why you think I love Jurassic Park. It's not a perfect film. The worst thing about Jurassic Park is Jurassic Park 3. That's a given. But the hacking sequence. The hacking sequence near the end where you've got Lex on the keyboard. It's a Linux system. It's a Unix system. I can do this. I hate that sequence, and I hate that Tim is stood behind her doing fuck all in that scene when there are two people trying to close a door behind him. And they're trying to reach a gun, and he could just turn around, kick the gun towards them, then turn back around and keep beating on the back of Lex's chair if he really wanted to. That pisses me off every time I watch it. That's the only flaw with this film. It's other than that, it's perfect. It's flawless.
I have two things with it, and
no, it's
I
just
probably
one. I, just told
I
you're wrong, I
Jay. It's in my top 10 of all time. I worship it. Not quite as much as you, but I am in the wheelhouse. I mean, I've done my top 10. When I used to do top 10s, I did my top 10 favorite Jurassic Park moments. The part where they go look for Lex and Tim, and the T-Rex had just been standing on the other side of the fence, and now suddenly it's a 100-foot drop on the other side.
Yep.
I can't handle it. My brain explodes every time I watch it, especially because the movie is so smart, and I'm like, this is such an obvious, like... screw up.
Obvious, but it took a decade for anyone to notice it.
I noticed it from early on, but fair enough. And the other one that drives me nuts is Tim, but his character is supposed to be annoying. It's after he's already climbed over the fence, so he's already gone to the top and climbed over, and he's hanging on the other side, and he just won't go down. Yeah. I just want to punch the kid in the face every time. It's not a failure in the movie, it's not a failure in the writing, it's just a character moment that I fucking hate and drives me crazy.
I didn't want to bring up the kids are annoying as my problem, because that's my problem with every kid in every film. So... I thought it was just me.
But... I feel like that's their...
Jay
I feel like
children,
yes,
and
he
Heather hates that they won't go down.
Ew. I have that same feeling, too. I feel like teenagers specifically are written just to make me cringe and scratch at my skin. Because I'm like, I would smack them. I'd punch them right in their face. How is this happening?
Okay, well, Heather's got on one of her tangents as she does every show. So luckily for everyone else, I can answer this question in one word, and it's Ewoks. Heather,
I thought you
what about
Raiders.
You?
I thought you would have done Raiders.
Well,
what's that?
I thought you would have picked Raiders as your film that you'd find a flaw with.
Star Wars is fair. Star Wars has so many flaws that it's easy. It's pick one that's pretty bad.
Yeah, but the Muppetry of Return of the Jedi is where everything goes awry. Like, Jedi's not a bad film until you get all the Muppets in there, honestly. It gets a little crazy with Muppets.
Unless you look into the plan at Jabba's Palace and what they're actually trying to do there.
I think it's fair to say that you can kind of catch the age demographic of where you came out when the Star Wars movies were. If Return of the Jedi was your favorite when you were a kid, you can kind of guess the age that you were as you saw them for the first time. Because A New Hope was always my favorite as a kid. And then people would tell me they like Return of the Jedi. I'm like, you must have been born in the 90s or something.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Phantom Menace, go fuck yourself. Fucking millennial.
Well, Return of the Jedi is my fiance's favorite of the originals because of the teddy bears.
So we know how old she is. Way to go on that younger woman, Jay.
She was born high five.
Nice.
Exactly.
Very nice. My pick is also a Star Wars one. It is the whole Luke and Leia being separated. That's fine, whatever. But why would you send Luke back with the aunt and uncle that if Vader wanted to go look and he has the same fucking last name? Like all this mystery of the past of where was Luke Skywalker?
Well, they were planning for the they're planning for the Rogue One cameos from Jimmy Smith. That's why.
The long game.
Yeah, that was the whole plan. They knew that one day somebody was going to have Jimmy Smith be in it. Yeah, that was the plan. Yeah, that one I always has driven me nuts for years. I'm like, okay, fine, he's with the aunt and uncle, but why the fuck would he have the last name Skywalker?
Yeah, right?
Like, and from that planet, no less. Yeah, so that one drives me nuts. If Vader wanted to find him, he would have found him. There would have been some whisper, something bad, big plot hole.
Okay, well, we're on the same page as typically. Question number three, Jay, we'll go back to you. What is your movie actor prop gesture pet peeve? Like actors that are constantly eating in scenes or something like a tick that an actor has, what drives you nuts?
The ones that have become more famous, I enjoy. Like Tom Cruise always running, I'm fine with that. Tom Hanks always needing to pee, I'm happy with that one. But the one that's going to annoy Dylan, Owen Wilson saying "Wow,"
I agree.
It's not that he does it in every film. It's the way that he does it that annoys me. It's the just the elongation of the vowel. It just I don't like it.
How do you feel when he whispers it? I feel like he whispers it a lot too. Like,
yeah.
Wow.
I think I don't think I really like him as an actor that much. Now I come to realize it. I don't like him, and that's what he does the most. So,
go with him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go with him. Like I struggled with this one because most actors I like tend to have these kind of things. Like I really like Michael Shannon as an actor, and he always plays the same kind of character of somebody who may or may not be crazy, and I like everything he does with that. So
Brad Pitt's always eating something. Yeah, they're. Yeah, a lot of them are fun. I love the Tom Cruise running. It gets me excited. When I go see a Tom Cruise movie, I wait so I can go, hey, yeah! I'm clapping when nobody else is in the theater. It's a good moment for me.
It's like
well, the mummy's coming.
Like, yeah. I like that because it means Sean Bean gets a cool death scene.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I went with that kid from Days of Confused because he grabs his nose the whole... Speaking of noses, little Owen Wilson callback... The kid from Days of Confused grabs his nose the entire fucking movie. It drives me nuts. Days of Confused is one of my favorite films of all time, and it takes me out of the movie every time. And I know he's not a known actor, and it's probably like one of his first jobs, but it drives me nuts. It fucking almost takes me out of the film every time I watch it. Can't stand it. Heather.
Mine is Julia Roberts, and I have a fine distinction with her, and this is one that Renee Zellweger and Hilary Swank can't cross for me. I do not like either of them, and it makes me sometimes not like them in movies. Renee Zellweger is more likable in movies than Hilary Swank, but I do not like Julia Roberts, but I enjoy her movies, and I think she's extremely likable and charming and all good things that is Julia Roberts. However, I cannot stand her giant open mouth laugh. She looks like she's going to swallow a whole city. If I watched it on the 60-inch or 65-inch TV, I would literally have to leave the room because I would have nightmares about getting eaten by her giant mouth.
You know what's funny, Heather?
Hmm?
I'm married to a redhead with a giant mouth.
That's not a bad thing.
Whoa, nice. I like where you took that. All right, let's wait. Yeah, that was good. Okay, let's go on to question number four. Let's end that there. All right, Jay. What is your favorite movie explosion?
So I've got two from the same film, and that film is Deep Blue Sea. I love Deep Blue Sea. It's just part of the sharks. It's the helicopter crash when it gets pulled down onto the top of the facility, goes up like instead of water, it's petrol. It's just insane how big that explosion is. And the second one is LL Cool J killing the shark after saying "You ate my bird" when the explosion mm-hmm. in the kitchen. They're both fantastic.
Shark ate me.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. No, that's great. I love that fucking film. By the way, I think everyone's. Thomas Jane makes oddly likable films.
He does. He makes really bad movies that are somehow likable. He makes awesomely bad movies.
Yes. And, like, he's another one of those guys that, like, was probably poised for, like, leading man, hardcore leading man potential, and did not for some reason. But, yeah, even, like, The Punisher, it's like, I kind of just watch it for him. I like him.
One of the better jokes on Arrested Development, one of the latest series, was one of the characters not knowing who he was. I enjoyed that.
Well, I went to X-Men Origins Wolverine, and it's him in the leather jacket walking away after he claws the fuel and the helicopter, again, a helicopter, blows up behind him. The reason I've chosen it, it is the quintessential cool guy walks away from explosions. It is the, like, the penultimate moment where all the explosion movies we've ever had are, like, built up to form this one cheesy walk away from explosion scene, and it's so good it should be in a fucking Mountain Dew commercial. Like, it's just perfect. It's the perfect explosion for Hollywood. I love it.
It's pretty fantastic.
Purged everything from that film from my head.
You shouldn't, except should. Deadpool's mouth being shut, which was dumb. Anyway, Heather, what about you?
Well, I think we should all take a moment and give Michael Bay props for all of his films and all of his explosions. Literally, if anything smashes or breaks or there's a sound of anything in my house, or we're playing video games and things blow up, you will hear any of my children echo in the background, "Sponsored by Michael Bay!" It is a running joke and has been for a very long time. So I'd like to thank Michael Bay now. You can call me. I'll you know, do whatever you want as far as explosions go.
I feel like Bad Boys has got to be at the top for you, right?
Bad Boys, definitely, but I couldn't think of narrowing any down in all of those. And then in the midst of trying to pick one from Michael Bay, I decided to just acknowledge his across the board. I thought about another movie guy who likes to blow shit up and has a ton of fun just destroying the planet Earth. And I thought, Roland Emmerich.
Yes!
So I thought of all the explosions in Independence Day. They are absolutely, still, I think they had to have been done with miniatures because they are so incredible.
Oh, yeah. And the White House is like an iconic one, I think.
Yeah. But they're all amazing still. I think they're absolutely fantastic. I think they are some of the most iconic movie explosions ever. And they're going to be that way 20, 30 years from now.
Okay. All right. Let's go to question number 5. Jay, name 3 actors' careers you'd like to see resurrected, even if it's improbable.
Joe Pesci, Daniel Stern, Rick Moranis.
Done?
Ooh. Jokingly, I said to Mike when I was writing these down, I'm like, you'd want Rick Moranis and Tony Danza back.
you know what's funny?
Because he always says to me that they're dead. If he thinks an actor's dead, he's like, they're with Tony Danza and Rick Moranis.
God. Tony Danza. Hey, okay, so the funny thing is, this is a question Heather wrote, but this goes back to, you tweeted at me the other day, Jay, because I said, I had this like moment in my head where I said, I want to see, tomorrow I want to wake up and in the papers I find out that in 2 weeks a film's coming out starring Gene Hackman and Sean Connery called One Last Job. And when it comes out, they do no press and they disappear back to obscurity, but we get one last film called One Last Job with Gene Hackman and Sean Connery. And I think you tweeted those 3 names at me they should be in it as well.
I said Pesci and Moranis, yeah.
Okay.
I understand. And then you replied saying they're too big or they're not big enough or something. And I was confused by your response.
Well, Pesci's short.
Okay.
I think Pesci and Hackman, though, I think those are timeless guys that can do anything at any time. Rick Moranis would need a lot of hugs to get back around. But you know, I think you can put Pesci in anywhere at any time. And I think Hackman, too. He's so fucking good.
I read an interview with Rick Moranis, which he doesn't do very often. Very recently, he did an interview. And it was he's just really content living his life and enjoying his family. And, like he's happy.
And
it's
like,
it's
cool.
A problem.
It's kind of refreshing. Yeah, that is the problem. But it's also kind of refreshing that to think, and you know, Canadian, so there you go. But anyway, for mine, I went with literal resurrection. I went Steve McQueen, Paul Newman, Gene Wilder.
Okay.
Well, that's kind of cheating.
Cheating. You said even if it's improbable.
I
didn't
say
impossible. Yeah, that's on the question, numbnuts.
Gene Wilder's
I have no idea what I'd do. Yes, exactly. I didn't. Are all these questions mine?
The bad ones.
So, Steve McQueen and Paul Newman, are you doing, like, Towering Inferno 2? Is that what you're pitching?
No!
Why not?
I just want...
Why not?
I want him back for Towering Inferno 2, is that the question?
Yeah.
I want to bring back disaster movies.
Me too.
No!
McQueen and Newman are both the stars of Towering Inferno. They come back for the sequel.
Oh, yeah, and we'll add Gene Wilder in there to, like, have a little comedic edge to it.
You can have the
no, bring ball. OJ back. We need the juice.
He's not dead yet. Anyway, Heather, what are your three?
Mine are Michael Biehn, Mike Myers, and Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yeah, Mike Myers.
He's so good.
What is he doing?
I don't know. I kind of started to taper off his movies after The Love Guru and The Cat in the Hat, and I got kind of sad. And, you know, but he still does, like, these great dramatic cameos sometimes, and he has the ability to do a lot more.
Kind had a nice cameo in Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
But even that's almost 10 years ago now.
Well, he's set to be in a film later this year with Margot Robbie and Simon Pegg called Turtle.
Ooh.
Oh, I like that.
That sounds good. Yeah. You don't even have to tell me anything else. And Cuba Gooding Jr., he's another one who has a lot of movies that just go straight to DVD, weird things.
Yeah.
And he's so good. He's always been so good.
He was the Oscar curse, right? Like, because he won the Oscar and then, like, Snow Dogs came out or something, and his career kind of went to shit. But didn't he just win an Emmy?
Yeah,
Golden Globe. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So maybe.
Speaking of OJ.
Yeah, he's hot topic today.
Yeah.
So maybe he'll come back and bring things around, but I think it would still take a lot.
Cheap and as for come.
As for Michael Biehn, I think we can say the ship has sailed, but I won't stop hoping.
Okay.
I love him.
He could have some kind of late in the day supporting kind of role. I feel like he could get an Oscar nomination in a few years' time. I'd be happy.
I've tried to interact with him on Facebook a lot. His wife actually is constantly prompting him to talk and update things on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I think he does a lot behind the scenes now. It looks like he does a lot as far as producing and directing smaller stuff and that kind of thing. But
I think it's all about getting the right role at this point for him. Just needs to find.
I think so too. And I honestly don't know what kind of range he has, because he's mostly played these. Well, he was a Cameron boy forever, but you know he did the rest of the movies he did were kind of more action oriented.
I like K2 a lot. K2 is a good movie. He was in Grindhouse, which is going to come up here in a few minutes. I guess it was a while ago now. But anyway, let's move on to this next question. We'll go back to Jay. What is the most painful pee-holing experience you've had in the theater, but you couldn't bear to leave and miss a second of the movie?
I'm guessing this is a Heather question.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
I have no idea. I don't remember times I was holding in pee. I'm sorry. I tend to kind of plan my drinking when I go to the cinema, so I won't. I pee before I see the film, so I don't sit there. I think, like, Hateful Eight, maybe? I don't know. But one time when I was younger, I had to leave the cinema to go for a wee was when I watched the 1998 Roland Emmerich version of Godzilla, which is still a film I really enjoy. And I missed the bit where the taxi drives into his mouth. And I didn't see that until it came out on DVD, and that's like the best part of the film. So that annoyed me. So ever since then, I vowed never leave the cinema for peeing again.
Well, as an alcoholic, I've learned to hold my pee, so that's not really the problem. The problem for me is I'm a smoker, so that's where I get problems, particularly with, like, Tarantino movies and shit like that. But I haven't had a pee-holding experience. I did have an experience one time. Our kids were younger. We had a date night set up. We were going to go see Grindhouse, right? So what was Grindhouse? Like 3.5 hours, 3 hours, 45 minutes, something stupid like that?
Something ridiculous.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. So prior to leaving for the movie, our babysitter's coming over. I'm using the restroom. I bend over, and I get a pain in my chest, and I think I'm having a heart attack. So I go to this film, and we're sitting there for 3 hours, and I'm having this horrible stabbing pain right in the middle of my chest. And about 2 days later, I go to the doctor, and I had popped, like, my ribs, the sternum rib or whatever, like, right in the middle of your chest had come out. And my doctor literally put hand on my chest, hand on my back, pushed together, and popped my rib back in. So I watched that 4-hour fucking movie with the rib popped out. That's my most painful movie-going experience.
I know a guy who was playing, like, laser tag and vaulted over a wall and landed on an arm. That kind of hurt. And then played a game of bowling using that arm. Won the game of bowling, went to the hospital and found out he'd broken his arm.
Yeah. I have heard some bad laser tag stories. Apparently that's dangerous.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay. Heather, what about you? I imagine you have one in mind.
I'm sorry. I just so much felt like I was in Lethal Weapon 3, and you were, one of you were Rene Russo, and the other one was Mel Gibson.
You're Rene Russo.
Mine, and I remember writing this one out of all of them. I do remember writing this one because I did have a specific movie in mind, and it was Kill Bill 2, and it was because I was pregnant with one of the dragons, and I, again, made sure I used the loo right before I went, but pregnant bladder is awful. I mean, sometimes you have to go every 15, 20 minutes. It just is what it is. And I refused to leave. And it was probably one of the more painful experiences I've had ever in my life. I contemplated peeing in my cup and trying to get around and doing it. But I didn't. I've done much more awful things in the theater than that. So it really wasn't that much of a stretch for me to pee in the cup. But guys, I made it.
We all just named Tarantino movies, which is proof that those are fucking too long.
Yep.
They need some dialogue. They needed, I don't know. I don't want them to be cut. I love that they're long. But for a theater-going experience, I don't think it would be too bad to have a 10-minute intermission.
Yeah,
for things like the bathroom. Most movies, I would say, unnecessary. But for Tarantino ones, I don't want to miss a second.
Yeah, but, like, come on. We couldn't lose some of that Kill Bill Superman speech. We couldn't cut like a little bit of dialogue out of that thing towards the end of that volume 2.
No.
You just you take away the trailers from the start of the film and put them in the interval in the middle.
Because that's the thing too. There, you get those, and then you add like 20 minutes onto your sitting time there.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to watch them, but well, I can.
Yeah,
miss
but
them.
Being geeks, we've typically seen them all unless we're there opening night and they're just like releasing something. Like I've typically seen all the trailers before I go to the theater. You know what I mean?
I don't anymore. I used to. I don't anymore. I see some, but some of them kind of like what I love is when it's a really strange one. Like if you're going to see a kids movie or like a film or something, and you see something that's a little bit more edgy, and you're like, "Wow, what are they doing?" Or you're going to see an R-rated movie, and they show you a trailer for a fucking kids movie, and I want to throw popcorn at shit. Those are good trailer going experiences.
All right,
I'm tangenty today, Kai.
I can tell. But I need to wrap this up. So we're going to question number 7, Jay. Everyone does a bad celebrity impression. You've done one before. Do one again.
I do several on the show. We do. We have a on the Lampcast even. We do a annual show of celebrity lampity where I host the entire show as Sean Connery, which is
I've never heard of that.
A frankly terrible impression of Sean Connery, and it's so bad that I have to do other ones as well. So I hosted a couple of couple of rounds as Jason Statham. You know what I mean. it's very similar to the Russell Crowe I did last time, just a bit more British. I recently I tried to do Slim Pickens, but it came out a bit more like Don Knotts, so I don't do that one too well. But the one that people seem to like the best is Dr. Claw.
Oh, that's my favorite
Gadget. I'll get you next time, Gadget. Which is the one that hurts my throat the most, so I can't do that one very much.
I see why I always get invited back to be on that episode, because it must be hard to book.
Yes,
That's my favorite one to do, except that I do terrible impressions, so I'm a terrible guest to have on.
Oh, yeah, Heather was on the first time. She did her Rick Grimes and was one of the highlights of the show.
Coral!
Exactly.
I just kept saying everyone was a whore and I was going to shoot them.
There's things.
And, we had DJ Valentine. You've had on before. He did a good Mickey Mouse, and
DJ is fantastic. He is. Yeah, he's done Mickey Mouse on the show. He did the joke otherworldly. Last time.
He was high on cocaine for that episode. It was outstanding.
But yeah, it is very hard to book that one, and it's one that people tend to drop out of fear of not wanting to be on. And it doesn't help that I need to have 6 guests on it for it to work.
Oh,
that's why I didn't mind doing it. I think I don't think I was booked for it either. I think you asked me because someone canceled. And I'm like, I have no shame. I will absolutely go make fun of myself and let other people laugh at me.
And people say, I don't want to be on it because I can't do a good impression. It was like, have you heard my Connery? I'm hosting the show and I can't do a good impression.
You guys are doing a great impression of Captain Side Tangent. So I'm just going to say, this brings us to the end of the Series 7. It's time to play the game. Here's some music about that.
The game, don't blow it, the game.
All right, the game is simple. I have chosen 3 films for you, Jay. For each film, I will give you 7 clues taken from IMDb that include the year and genre of the film, actors of the film, tagline, director. If you were to guess on the first clue, you would get 7 points. Second clue, 6 points, so on down. perfect score would be 21. Probably not going to happen. We have said in the past that if you get a 12, you've done pretty good. Now, we have instituted a time limit because people like to and aw through the thought process. No, now you have 5 seconds to answer. And I think
five?
10.
Jesus.
10. 10. You. Sorry, I misspoke. Okay. You have 10 seconds to answer. Otherwise, we will move on to the next clue. So it's always best to just shout something out, even if it might be wrong. Okay?
Okay.
Now, I themed them last week. There's a little theme here at the end of this. Tell me if you can guess what it is.
Okay.
For 7 points, your first film is a 2005 action-adventure horror film.
Action-adventure horror. King Kong.
Four. I had to check. No, that's not it.
I like that guess.
For 6 points, I did not realize he was in this movie, and I looked up the pronunciation of it. I can't say any fucking words today. Pronunciation.
I might have an accent, but don't I
you
just
finish
can't
it
talk.
Up. He nunced it. He went nunced.
It's pronounced. There's not an O there.
Nunce,
it's
nunce,
a U.
Nunce.
Wait. Does pronouncement not have an O in it? And
pronounce does. Live? Pronunciation, I don't think
does. Oh, right. I can't spell it. Nah, you're right. Heather's dumb. All right, for 6 points, David Oyelowo is in this movie.
The hell? Wrong year.
Martin Luther King.
I know who he is. Like, Rise of the Planet of the Apes? It's the wrong year, but...
Okay, for 5 points, the tagline of this film is Evolve or Die.
Shit.
Oh, fuck.
The one.
Is that the thing with Adrian Brody? Splice?
Four points. No, okay. Ben Kingsley is in this movie.
What the fuck?
Jay's our best fill in the gap for silence. Guess.
Yeah.
I first love it.
Ben Kingsley.
British.
Ben magical.
Kingsley. I don't know. A sexy beast. I don't know.
Okay. For 2 points, 3 points, this probably won't help you. Peter Hyams directed this movie.
And he would be... I feel like I'm going to kick myself at this one. Can't think of Ben Kingsley films. He's been in everything.
Yes.
He's been in whatever.
3 seconds.
Lucky Number 11.
For 2 points, Edward Burns is the star of this film.
Ooh, talk about somebody else who didn't make it.
No wonder I don't know what this film is, because I've only seen him in like Saving Private Ryan and The Holiday. So, Saving Private Holiday.
Okay. For 1 point, say the words A Sound of Thunder.
A Sound of Thunder is a film I've never heard of.
Okay. Me either. That was shitty, Kai. That was like worse than Far and Away.
Nope. Must see film, 2005. Alright, here we go. Your second film. For 7 points, this is where you can make up some ground.
But I'm not gonna...
A 1985 comedy crime mystery.
Comedy crime mystery 85? The Goonies.
For 6 points, Gina Davis is in this movie. Heather, your rule?
Oh, at this point, if we tell you an actress or actor that is of large name or quality...
She doesn't know what she's doing.
She has a massive name.
Go ahead, Heather. Finish it up.
Then they are not in a lead role at this point. They are supporting the other cast or possibly in an ensemble. Go!
Okay, I feel like my time is up. Okay.
10 seconds.
Beetlejuice?
Okay, let's see if this tagline helps you for 5 points. Meet the only guy who changes his identity more often than his underwear.
Oh, shit, it's Fletch.
It is Fletch for 5 points. That is correct.
Nice.
Yay.
All right. Your final film for 7 points is a 2004 drama, romance, sci-fi film.
Drama, romance, sci-fi. Star Wars Episode 3.
For 6 points.
No, okay.
That was cute.
For 6 points, and I'm just going to help you out. Heather, you don't have to say the rule again, okay? For 6 points.
Please don't say the rule again. I know the rule. I understand. Don't put us through that again.
Mark Ruffalo is in this movie.
Sci-fi romance?
Yeah.
Is it?
Drama,
Eternal Sunshine?
For 6 points, it is...
Get in!
Eternal Sunshine.
Love that
on
movie.
On the Spotless Mind. Bringing to you a grand total of 12, so you've done very well, Jay.
Yay.
Spanktacular.
Now, What was the theme of these movies?
Ty picked weird shit.
Eternal Sons. Nope. I can't remember what the first one was. A Consequence of Thunder. Oh, they got weather in the title.
That is a Fletch.
I don't know. You don't have Fletchy winds in America.
As Heather would say, that's not climatic.
Fletch, a Sound of Thunder, and Eternal Sons. I don't know.
These are all films loved by the former shepherd of the large association of movie blogs, my good friend Dylan Fields.
I knew he liked Fletch and not Eternal Sunshine, but I didn't know he liked that film that doesn't exist before.
No, that's
game.
A little shout out to him. It's a film that him and I love, and okay. We can't explain it to anyone because I could see people thinking it's a horrible film, but we happen to really like it. So
I don't think it's fair
that you gave it to Jay.
No. Fuck you. It was a 2005 release, so suck it.
You suck it first.
You do it better. All right, no. Brings us to the end of the show. Jay, thank you again for coming on. Please plug all your numerous ventures and tell us where we can find you online and all that stuff.
My site is lifeversusfilm.com. That's life vs film. That's where I'd write all my reviews, mainly for films on the 1,000 Movies You Must See Before You Die list, which is the worst thing you can do if you want to start a blog, is do that list. My podcast is The Lambcast. I've had Guy and Heather on many times and hope to again. Heather will be on for the Alien Covenant show in a few weeks. You can find that on iTunes at Lambcast, search for on Twitter at Lambcast, and largeassmovieblogs.com is the large association of movie blogs, otherwise known as The Lamb. If you have a movie blog and would like to be part of The Lamb, then come to The Lamb site and join up. It's fun. You get to be on The Lambcast.
It's a nice community, especially if you're just getting into kind of doing any of this movie-related stuff. There's all good people there. Jay, is The Lamb getting a new logo soon?
It is getting a new logo soon. The wonderful Kai has drawn a new logo for us, and it's fantastic, and we are planning on doing the site... shifting the server and just setting it, because it's a little bit run down in places. Not everything works on it at the moment. But I'm working on that. I kind of took over a leaky ship when I took over the Shepherd Top role. So I'm trying to plug all the holes up. And yeah, it's getting rebranded, and the logo is fantastic, and everyone who has seen it has said so. So thank you very much for doing that, Kai.
That's awesome. No, I was honored to be asked, so thank you for asking me.
No problem.
I wish it could be better. I'm still learning digital art.
I love it.
Okay, good. I'm glad you like it. And hopefully we'll do some more stuff with the lamb that we drew. We'll do some other logos that you can use around the site, too, when I get some time. So.
Sounds good. Excellent.
Heather, what do we got to plug?
You should follow us on Instagram at MILFcast. It's very sexy most of the time. Lately, I've been a little MIA because I'm lost. But I'll find my way back again, I promise. You can also follow us on Facebook. You can find Kai on Twitter sometimes. At Kiderman, or you can find me on Twitter, also occasionally, sometimes, often, maybe a lot, at Heather_Kenobi.
Yeah, and if you want to see more of my artwork, I've just started a page. Follow me on Instagram at The Amazing Kiderman for all of my Kytoons, as I'm calling them. Is that it, Heather? Are we done here? I just lost my mic. Are we done?
We're done, Kai, I think.
All right, I just want to let everyone know we're going to take an extra week off. Heather's got some stuff going on, and my birthday's coming up, and I got to do a Guardians of the Galaxy shit on Cinco de Cayo. So that's what's happening. We'll be back in about 3 weeks. It's been real fun. I can do this all day, but there's movies to be watched. Beer to be... What do I say? Yeah, we're going to go do that. We'll see you next time, bitches. Heather?
I've decided that I'm a Rapidash Kai.
Okay. I totally just fucked up the outro.
That's fine. I fuck up things all the time. It gives the show character.
For real.
For real, though.
Alright, here we go. Nope. Did Heather just die?
I thought that was you coughing on your cough.
Who was that?
I muted myself and coughed, but apparently I didn't mute myself, so I'm sorry about that.
No, you partially muted it and sounded like a woman coughing. Do you cough like a woman, Kai?
Not intentionally.
And we have our first outtake. Okay. J woman cough before Sirius 7 noted. And back to our regularly scheduled broadcast. Jay, you're panting. How hard was it to pee, man?
I was downstairs and I ran. I'll mute myself.
Stop being a mouth breather.
Like, girl, you know. Shit.